Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on Human Rights Demand. This is Mary Neal. Welcome to the Bob. Wait a minute. I believe that's Bob calling now. Just a moment, please.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear.
We want to thank all of you for joining us on the Bob Darby Advocacy for the Homeless Mental. We really appreciate your joining us every Thursday at 3 p.m. for this broadcast. It concerns people who have mental illness, and in addition to that, they are homeless. Bob Darby just called me on my home phone, but I was not allowed to take his call. My phone is firmly controlled by whoever controls telephones and computers. This show should have 2 hours on the board. However, that was switched to 30 minutes. And so this is the type of thing that we go through in America, advocating for the less fortunate, for people who are, for instance, homeless and mentally ill. I want to thank you for joining us right now so that we can talk about these things. I'm going to go ahead and play Nina Simone for you. I wish that I knew what it felt like to be free.
Leave your message for 404-622-5859.
Hello, Bob Darby. How are you today? Bob Darby? Bob Darby? Hello, Bob Darby? Okay. It looks like we're having problems today. These people are called the vengeful librarians, and they take over Americans' phone numbers. They take over our phone calls. They take over our Internet shows until they can pass a law to get people who care about human and civil rights off the Internet altogether. I see Bob Darby's number is up here on the board. However, it looks like he's not able to speak now. Bob Darby, are you there? Okay, it looks like I'm on the line by myself, perhaps. I'm not sure you can hear me. My name is Mary Neal. I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. That's a very compromised group of people, people who are jailed in order to keep them subjugated to the prison investment system in America. And that's what's going on. All the news that I can give you.
Your recording has reached
the
maximum length. To replay your message, press 1. To delete and re-record your message, press 3. For delivery options, press 4. To send a fax, press 6. To cancel this message, press star. To send this message now, press pound or hang up.
I'm subjugated to poverty, homelessness, and death for reason of.
To replay your message, press 1. To delete and re-record your message, press 3. For delivery options, press 4. To send a fax, press 6. To cancel this message, press star. To send this message now, press pound or hang up. To replay your message, press 1. To delete and re-record your message, press 3. For delivery options, press 4. To send a fax, press 6. To cancel this message, press star. To send this message now, press pound or hang up. Your message has been sent. Thank you for using T-Mobile voicemail. Goodbye.
Good afternoon. This is Mary Neal. It looks like they're keeping Bob Darby off the phone today. All the phones in America, as well as the computer connections, are in the hands of you-know-who. And we have a great deal of cyber-stalking problems, particularly at the Human Rights Demand channel. That is because these same individuals are not the least bit interested in human rights. In fact, I'm not sure that any of you or any of us are human beings to them. And if we are considered human beings to them, then obviously it does not matter. This is the show where Bob Darby talks about the homeless mentally ill. Now, the homeless mentally ill are perceived as money-making properties. Properties. They're considered money-making properties for the prison profiteering system. They would like to put the homeless mentally ill, they'd like to give them a home behind bars. They would like to put all the homeless mentally ill behind bars. So therefore, what's happening in that area and what's probably happening in your area is that they are shutting off funds to homeless shelters. That way, they will have an opportunity to go around and pick up the homeless vagrants, pick up people who are panhandling, pick up people who have outstanding tickets for being homeless, and then they can remand them to your area jails and prisons where they will remain, especially if they're mentally ill, and you will pay for it because you pay taxes. So your tax money is not going to do anything that will benefit people who are homeless and mentally ill because those people are designated to remain in the prison investment system. We're at a situation where prison profiteering has spread throughout this country like an airborne disease, and everyone who you could count on for assistance has joined the program by their own stock portfolios. I think that, generally speaking, most officials who you would ordinarily look to for relief in circumstances where Americans are suffering have themselves become a part of the problem, either directly or indirectly, in that they have also got prison stocks, and they don't want to do anything to retard the growth of the prison stocks. And so, therefore, homeless centers and shelters are closing, and services to people who are in danger of dropping through the cracks. In other words, families that may be a house note behind or a month behind in their rent, and they're threatening to be evicted, they don't want to do anything to retard that either, because the more homeless people there are, then the more opportunities these prison profiteers see to perhaps get to jail someone, because this is the way they earn your tax money. And, you know, violent crime is down in America. Crime is down, but our prison enrollments are up. And who are these people who are going to jail since violent crime is down? Well, by far and large, the people who are going to jail are nonviolent offenders, and they may have done property crimes. In fact, a great many of them have done the crime of vagrancy. They've done the crime of asking someone for a dollar so they can buy something to eat. They've done the crime of having more possessions in their than they can carry at one time. So they sent around a truck to pick up all of their extra possessions that they can't physically carry. And generally they put the homeless person in jail, especially if they've asked someone for something, because that's called panhandling. So that, I think our prisons and jails are filling up, in other words, with poor people. And whereas the prison profiteering system doesn't really care what race the people are, because, you know, a person that they're getting paid for is just a person they're getting paid for. But the police officers themselves act on their own particular prejudices. And so, therefore, by far and large, the prison population is mostly black and Latino. And so it's going to continue to be that. Again, I don't think it's necessarily the prison owners who care, but the police officers tend to arrest people who are black and brown more than they do others. So these are truths that they don't like to keep online. They don't like for people to talk about what they're doing. So I run into a lot of trouble. I'm sorry if you had difficulty connecting today. And Bob, if you're listening, you can try to call again. And this time, stay on the line. I want to tell all of our hosts and guests that when you call in to Human Rights Demand, stay on the line, because sometimes I'm delayed fighting with stalkers for about 10 or 15 minutes. I'm delayed. But that does not mean that your best bet is to hang up. Your best bet is to hold on. Because I'm delayed, but I'm working on it always. My name is Mary Neal. I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. And I just want you to know how things are in America right now when you want to advocate on behalf of persons who are intended to stay in their same situation so that they can go to jail or prison. Because that is what they want for people who are homeless. That is what they want for people who are mentally ill. They want them in jail. And who's the they? The they are the prison investors. America has probably made prison investments its main enterprise right now. I don't know if that industry has not overtaken agriculture. I don't know if that industry has not overtaken technology. I think that prison investment is probably the main growth industry in the USA. In other words, if you read the Constitution, I believe it's the 13th Amendment or the 14th Amendment, whatever, it says that a person may not be enslaved except through the criminal justice system. And so these people are basically slave masters. they want is they want an opportunity to enslave people legally. And so they gave themselves an out. Their granddaddies, their great-granddaddies, the so-called founders, gave themselves an out to continue enslaving people because free labor is very desirable for slave masters. So they gave themselves an out to enslave people to deal in human trafficking in the Constitution, which says that it's not right to enslave someone except if they've been through the criminal justice system first. So their grandchildren picked up on that, and they said, okay, well, all we've got to do to get our slaves back to take them through the criminal justice system. And so that's what they do. They take people out of the slave pool, which is in general America, particularly people who lack wealth or who look black and brown. They take them out of the slave pool. They run them through the criminal justice system. That's the formality that was laid out for them in the Constitution by their granddaddies. And then they remand them, which is the prison industrial complex. No crime is necessary, and no trial is even usual or ordinary. Most of the people are denied a trial. They're told that, you know, you can either take this amount of time without a trial, or if you go through a trial, we're going to give you a super exorbitant sentence because you gave us too much trouble coming on in here being our slave. And so they have, in many cases, public defenders who are working with the prison investors, and they really do punish people for demanding a trial, because when they sentence people who demanded a trial, who just stood on their constitutional right for a public trial on the charges, if they do get a conviction after doing that, and of course they're completely in control of whether or not you get a conviction, because the judge sitting up there can just throw out any evidence that he wants to not consider. Okay, so they're completely in charge, basically, of whether or not a person gets a fair trial, because the jury is sitting there, poor little things, eating up everything the prosecutor says and has no idea that very often the judge is working in cahoots with the prosecutor and would just throw out any information they don't want the jury to hear based on evidence you never heard. So if all you're going to hear during a trial is negative stuff about the defendant and nothing at all that's positive, nothing at all that proves his innocence, then you're going to rule guilty. So that's how they control that. And then when the individual is sentenced, they do throw the book at them because they sent them through the trouble of having to have a trial before they got their slave labor. So that's very punishable. That's like a slave who's trying to escape. And back in the day, they would always kill a slave who tried to escape because that was an example for the other slaves. So over a period of doing this, giving long sentences to people who tried to escape through trial by jury, that has taught the rest of the plantation slaves that they better take whatever sentence the prosecutor wanted to throw on them, even if they didn't do the crime, because if they don't do that, then they're going to go to jail anyway for much, much longer. A recent example of this was a young man, a boy really, who was around, I think about 15. He went with two grown-up young men to a robbery. And he, because he would not just take a plea, they sentenced him for, I think, a life sentence plus so many years, whereas the two grown young men that he went to the robbery with, they robbed a house party, they just got 10 and 13 years prospectively, whereas he got a life sentence. He's the youngest. He's a little teenager. he got a life sentence plus so many years. I think they did reduce his sentence since then. Guess what he gets? I think he's down to 40 years now. So this is what they do. They punish Americans if they stand up for their innocence and demand a trial. If they won't take the plea deal and just lie on themselves, then they punish them for resisting the slave master. So mentally ill people don't usually have the wherewithal to defend themselves against charges. They usually don't if they have severe mental illness. And so that's a favorite for them because for prison investors, they're a shoo-in. I mean, they just, you know, you give a mentally ill person something to sign and say, well, sign right here. They just smile and sign at some of them. And children also. In fact, 25% of the wrongful convictions in America come from mentally ill people and children. And so they wouldn't have as many mentally ill people going into prisons and jails if they had homeless shelters. Where would they be? They'd be in their homeless shelter. So they close the homeless shelters so that they will have the mentally ill homeless people in their clear sights because every one of them is worth a lot of money to prison investors. For instance, in New York, I read that each one costs you taxpayers $168,000 per year to keep him in jail. $168,000 per year. Now, I don't know how much money you make, but that's a lot of money. According to the average income, a family of four on the average income could survive about 4 or 5 years comfortably off of that $168,000. That's over $40,000 a year. I think it would break down to about $42,000 a year income for the family. And so a family of four could survive comfortably for about 4 years with the price that you're charged for keeping that homeless mentally ill person in jail 1 year. And that price would probably increase for the mentally ill because they're also eligible for so-called treatment behind bars. So now you got somebody in a very stressful situation, a person who's already got mental illness, and then you treat them for their mental illness. It seems to me that the first thing you would do would be to get them out of an environment that's not conducive to healing. But, of course, that's not the point. The point is to keep them there. So I run into a whole lot of difficulty going on air with these truths. And, you know, these truths, are they something that you don't know? Did you not know any of this? I think that by far and large, most of us know now America has a huge problem with slavery and that it's always been the case with this country. Caucasians came over as indentured servants. That means they were slaves. The only difference between them and an outright slave is that they had an ending date. Usually indentured servants were slaves for a period of 7 years, and then they were let loose. And they were told to go and discover the West. Go West, young man. And, of course, the West was fully inhabited with Native Americans, but they were paid so much per scalp. So their job basically was to go in there and kill the Indians and take the land and start agriculture, and that's what was done. That's what the Caucasians did when they were released from slavery. They came over as slaves, you know, at the beginning of this country. The Native Americans were enslaved, the ones that they didn't kill, and the blacks were brought over in chains from Africa. We were slaves, and the Asians who came, the earlier Asians, they were a little more than slaves. They did, they laid the railroad tracks and washed the people's shirts and, you know, had Chinese laundry. And they did a lot of menial labor. And the Mexicans who came this way, also, they had a lot of menial labor they did. And they are treated more or less like slaves. They have to hide in their houses, and they hide their relatives and what have you. So this slave state is still right here. They're getting ready to cut us off the air now because I'm supposed to get 2 hours live air, but somebody goes and changes that. Every time I change it to the 2 hours, they go and change it to 30 minutes. That is because we're not to talk about the present slave system. I never expected that I would be like a slavery abolitionist in 21st century, but that's the position of people who speak out against the prison profiteering system. You're in the position of an abolitionist, and you're treated like abolitionists were because you are endangered. And so pray for me. I'm in great danger telling you the truth. And it's really a pathetic mess. Try to call in if you can. You have 10 seconds. I'm away from my computer right now. But if you call into the channel, then you will be on air and we can hear from you. It's going to be on tape, so come back to Blog Talk Radio and listen. And we want to thank all of you for joining us today on Human Rights Demand. We're going to continue this broadcast even after we go off the air. I tell you. So, I know that many people don't know these truths, because if people did know it, if it was common knowledge, perhaps there would be a lot less cyber stalking around it. But many people probably don't know this. It's happening. It's happening to families all over this country. It's happening to the mentally ill, especially those who are homeless. It's happening to just people. But that's the system. That's the way it is. As I said, in America, slavery was abolished except for individuals who had been through the court system and had their freedom, they say legally, taken away. And then they could be enslaved. So as I understand it, individuals who are in prison, who refuse to work, they refuse to do this prison labor, they are thrown in solitary confinement, which is a type of torture. So, to avoid torture, these slaves do work. And American slavery is now competing with overseas companies as far as providing cheap labor. The prison investment companies can provide cheap labor that will compete with the wages that are paid to overseas companies. So, you think that your jobs went overseas. In fact, many, many jobs that were previously going overseas to find cheap labor are now being done behind prison walls by citizens who have become slaves through the prison industrial complex over here. And so, it's a self-fulfilling system here, because what we have is we have individuals who are enslaved. We have individuals who are enslaved. And then we have people who can't find a job. So many, many people who can't find a job, the reason they can't is because the jobs that they would have been pleased to have are behind bars. Now, when these people get out of prisons and jails, they are ineligible to apply for the jobs they did behind bars. Like if they were working for Microsoft, or if they were working for Boeing Airlines, if they were working for Starbucks Coffee, if they were working for some of these perfume manufacturers who do their manufacturing behind bars, and doing a great job at it as a prison laborer, they can't get those same jobs when they get out of them, because they're not they're not eligible because they have a felony or what have you. So you see, they're going to keep them in the revolving door in and out of jail, because when they get out, they're going to use the fact that they've been in behind them to entrap them in poverty, so that they will eventually, hopefully, do something else that will again entrap them in prison, and then they can get their job back. Then they are eligible to work again because they're prisoners again. So here's your free uniform, that big orange jumpsuit, and here's your job to do. Free uniforms, free food, all courtesy of the U.S. taxpayer. Now you have your job back because you recidivated. You came back. Welcome back. And so that's the deal. So America, for the poor and the middle class even, are usually considered a big slave pool, and they just dip in and get someone when they feel like it. And if you, again, are innocent, it really doesn't matter, because they offer you an opportunity to plea deal. If you take the plea deal, then they'll get you for less time the first time. But if you don't take the plea deal, they throw the book at you and get you for even life for first offense. So this is the situation. This is what's happening. And in order to have more people who are subjected to this system, they withhold funds for schools. You know, it's very hard to get funds for schooling. You know, they withhold funds for homeless shelters. They withhold funds from jobs programs, because all of those things, school, homeless shelters, jobs programs, all of those things will greatly decrease the number of people going to prisons. And if you decrease the number of people going to prisons, then you decrease fresh commodities in prison, which will impede the flow of money from the taxpayers to the prison investors. Now, who are these prison investors? Well, you might be a prison investor. You might be. You should go to your 401k plan or talk to your broker and find out, you know, not just how much dividends this account is going to pay this period, but you need to find out, well, what company is this that you're investing my pension in? What company is this that you invested my money in? Find out if you are a stockholder in the prison industrial complex. Lots of moms who have pretty decent jobs and they have a child locked up, and they go on visiting day and they cry with the child and they make plans for appealing their case and what have you. A lot of those same moms and dads are prison investors because they have stock that is in those companies. They need to find out from the manager of their 401k plans and from their investment portfolios, what are these companies making money from? What are they investing in? So you might be a prison investor and not even know it, because numerous retirement companies and what have you do invest their retirement plans in prison stock. So that's something that might surprise you. Check it out and see. The other thing is that I think that most people who own and operate prisons and invest heavily in them are judges, prosecutors, people in the Justice Department, and even lawmakers, yes, your U.S. Congress. So these people who are making these tough-on-crime laws, law of parties, three-strikes law, they are increasing their own stock portfolios. They are giving themselves a raise. That's what they're doing. And so we have a law in this country against, what do they call it, when you are privy to insider information, insider trading. So what's happening is our lawmakers and judges and prosecutors and what have you, essentially what they're doing is insider trading, because they are boosting their own stock portfolios when they make laws that are tough on crime. They're boosting their own stock portfolios when they change a law from being a misdemeanor to a felony. They are boosting their own stock portfolios when they do these things. And so when you're, say, on the local level, when your county commission or your city council vote close a homeless shelter, and you, the taxpayer, you think, oh, we don't have money in the budget for the homeless shelter. That's not it. Those people are voting to boost their own prison stock portfolios because they expect to be able to go and swoop up those homeless people when they see them sitting in the alley or they see them sitting under a bridge. They just can go and get them because then they're vagrant. They don't have a homeless shelter. So you've got to realize that this is an ecosystem. Everything is connected to something else. And so that will help you understand why the same cities and the same county commissions and the same city councils that don't have money for a homeless shelter have money to build new stadiums. They have money to build a, guess what, in Atlanta, the county commission, Fulton County Commission, is planning to close the homeless shelters. But in Atlanta, we have a brand new building called the International Center for Human Rights. So there was well over, I don't know, several million dollars. I have to look up the figure for you. For a building called the International Center for Human Rights. But the homeless shelters here are endangered or closed. So that is the situation. These people want to pretend to the world, and they congratulate each other, pats on the back, grand opening, that for honoring human rights. But it's in word only. It's not in deed. It's in word only. And I want you to know that it does not matter one bit if the people over justice are black or Caucasian. It does not matter. All they care about is the green money that's flowing their way from you, the taxpayer. So, again, my name is Mary Neal. I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. We were to have a program last night that was open mic night. I want to apologize to everyone right now because I did not have that program last night. I did not have that program last night because I was sleeping. The night before last, I was up all night working on my Human Rights Defender course. I was working on that course. And so last night, I was just too tired to have the Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill radio show. But I'm hopeful that we will reschedule it tonight. There are any number of people who are incarcerated and mentally ill that I feel that you need to know about. As a matter of fact, Terrell Scott's mother called me and said she has an update to her son's case. He's one of the incarcerated mentally ill. That's Terrell Scott. This young man is in Pennsylvania, which, of course, I think is one of the number one states for prison investments. And he is innocent of any crime. He's a young man who they arrested, denied a trial for 4.5 years. That's almost 5 years. He was denied a trial. And every time a trial date would come up, his defense attorney, who they had paid cash, he wasn't a state-appointed attorney, defense attorney and the prosecutor would take turns denying him trial. The defense attorney would say, oh, I need a continuance. And the prosecutor would say, when it was his turn, Terrell Scott is not available for trial. He's in a mental hospital. When that wasn't true, he was right there in prison. But these people don't care about just lying on court records. They don't have any compunction about that because usually the judge is just as crooked as they are. And so Terrell Scott was kept 5 years with no trial whatsoever. He was waiting to go to trial on these so-called offenses, on the charges, but he never did get a trial. And at some point, it became obvious to him that he could stay there forever and never get a trial in America. As a matter of fact, there are two black men with mental illness in Mississippi who've been waiting for a trial for 7 years, one of them, and 8 years, another. So these things are happening in the USA. Innocent people are arrested and kept indefinitely with no trial on the criminal charges whatsoever, especially if the prosecutor feels like the person is innocent and they might lose that warm body in jail. They're not given a trial. So Terrell Scott was never given a trial. After almost 5 years of that punishment, that torture that he was going through, and he was tortured. He was being beaten, spat upon with HIV spit, put in solitary confinement, and I mean, he was going through hell. And he was trying to hold out for a trial that never happened. So this young man finally agreed to plea bargain. So all of a sudden, you know, this young man who had been too crazy for a trial, he's incompetent to stand trial. He was perfectly competent to plea bargain. So when he plea bargained, they let him out. He was out for 2 months. And then they went to his mental hospital and picked him up. Now, he went to the mental hospital because he was dealing with PTSD from the stress of all the things that had happened to him over the period of 4.5 years of being incarcerated and being denied a trial. That was very stressful, and all the things that happened to him were very stressful. So he and his mother and family decided that he should go in and be an inpatient and get himself at that. He decided to be an inpatient. He'd be an inpatient until he get himself together. But they went to the hospital and picked him up, and they said, oh, you missed 3 probation appointments. There's no consideration given to what kind of lies they tell these days, because there's nobody who's in charge of justice who will actually see that justice is done. And, of course, they know that. So they lied on Terrell again, and this time they say, you missed 3 probation appointments. Now, 2 of these probation appointments he supposedly missed, he was still in prison. How are you going to miss probation appointments? How are probation appointments set for somebody who's still a prisoner? Okay? So that was an outright lie. You missed 3 of probation appointments, and the man hadn't even been out of prison. He hadn't been released. And the third one that he supposedly missed, he was an inpatient at a mental hospital. And being an inpatient in any hospital should stop all probation appointments. Have you ever heard of somebody walking up to a doctor and saying, doctor, sign me out of the mental hospital because I have a probation appointment today? The hospital notified his family that they would call the probation office and notify them that he was an inpatient. Well, obviously, Pennsylvania knew he was an inpatient because they went to his hospital to get him. Okay, so they knew he was an inpatient. So now Terrell Scott is back in prison on the lie that he missed probation appointments. But lying is perfectly okay in U.S. courts, especially if the judges are in on it. And most often, I think they are. It's corrupt courts. These people are just into prison investments, and the situation is that anything at all, any kind of court process they take you through to fulfill that 13th Amendment or the 14th, whichever one said that you could be a slave if you've been through a court process, they just want it on paper that you went through a court process, period. So the court process is a formality. They've already decided the outcome. It's just a formality that you go through. Because the main thing is they're trying to get it on paper that you had a court process so they can arrest you for crimes that you did not do. Because, you see, Americans who are, especially those who are black and brown and the ones who are poor, they're considered in a slave pool. And when they get ready, they just go fishing in the slave pool. Just throw in a line, whoever they pull out, fine. It doesn't matter whether or not you're guilty or innocent. Can't very well prove you're innocent when your attorney, your own defense attorney, is a part of the problem and won't present your evidence, won't call your witnesses. And that often happens to people. I found out recently that defense attorneys who don't go along with that program, some of them get their butts whooped. I have a video that's on YouTube I looked at, and you can look at it too, where this Florida judge got so teed off when the defense attorney said, I'm not going to waver. He was saying that he wasn't going to waver his client's right to a speedy trial. And I guess that's what he had been told to do, because he sounded like he had already been talking to someone, and when he stepped up to the podium, he just announced, I'm not going to waver. And the judge said, pardon me, he said it again, I'm not going to waver. The judge said, you don't have to help me, go sit down. Now, how would that help the judge, except the judge wants the man in jail, and he's a prison profiteer? How could it possibly help the judge, whether the defense attorney wavered or not? But the judge said out of his own mouth, you don't have to help me. Go sit down. I help myself. And the defense attorney said, I am a public defender. Refuse to sit down. I have a right to be here. So, boy, that defense attorney was standing his ground for his client, which is very unusual. I want to let you know that. But that judge said, look, if you want to, we can step outside. So he was offering the defense attorney to come on, we'll duke it out over this man. And they did. They stepped outside, and when the defense attorney got outside, boy, that judge was so hot with him, he let him have it. Bam, boom, 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 boom. I mean, he kicked some butt. I mean, there's no telling how much this client was worth to that judge. We had two judges in Pennsylvania who earned $2.6 million that they admit to earning over a period of years from channeling children into someone's private prison. And so these judges, hey, I didn't know it, defense attorneys, that y'all would actually get your butt whipped for not going along with this prison racketeering. All the defense attorneys who were doing evil things, I thought at one point that they were doing them because they were all prison investors themselves. But now I know that some of them are doing it because they don't want to get their butts whipped. They don't want to get beat up. And so that's what happened to that public defender who tried to stand up for his client's rights and who refused to waver his client's right to a speedy trial. And so what happened in Pennsylvania with Terrell Scott is that last week sometime, they actually took him to court for missing probation appointments, which were, you know, the whole thing was a lie, and they actually planned to sentence him to a big prison up in Pennsylvania for missing probation appointments that he never should have had the appointment. This is what's happening, and you got to pay for it. You got to pay for it. This is what's happening. Now, I talked to you a little bit about the fact that if you're innocent, that's not a great big plus for you being innocent, because, first of all, prison profiteers make the same amount of money from innocent detainees from guilty ones. With them, it's about the money, and it's not about who's innocent or guilty. In fact, if you're innocent and if your innocence is going to stand in their way, then the jury just simply won't get to hear your evidence of innocence, because the judge, who oftentimes is a prison profiteer himself, will not let your evidence get before the jury. even if you have an attorney who wants to present it. And lots of times people don't have an attorney who even wants to present their innocence. And this is what's happening with Mark Bowles, B-O-W-L-E-S, down there in, he's up there in Minnesota. Mark Bowles, M-A-R-K is his first name. You can look online for Mark Bowles, Minnesota. He's in Minnesota. He's a young man. He's mentally ill. See, they start with the most disenfranchised people. Whenever they start slavery, it's always with the most disenfranchised people. And so Mark Bowles is a U.S. veteran. He's got PTSD and epilepsy. So he's a castaway. He's a throwback because people who have mental illness don't usually get their civil rights honored, even if they are U.S. veterans. These people aren't impressed with who's a veteran. I mean, they're letting veterans die in the veterans hospital. So, come on. Anyway, Mark Bowles was accused of assault when a nurse or a healthcare provider in his hospital room tried to get away from him when he was having an epileptic seizure. Now, first of all, why is she even in his hospital room if she doesn't have any more calmness about her for people who are having epilepsy than that? If she hasn't been trying to deal with people who have traumatic brain injuries and epilepsy, what is she even doing in his room? But she was in his room. The young man was in the hospital after a traumatic brain injury. He was just out of a coma. And he was having an epileptic seizure. She tried to step away from him, get away from him, and she fell and bumped her own head, and he gets charged with assault. Also, Mark Bowles had been given medication that was time-release medication, and he was overly medicated. And he had also been given some medication that his mother, Diana Sprouse, says, that was not to be prescribed for him. So, you know, that's the thing about mental illness. You know, you have to take drugs. And these people just give you whatever drugs they want and whatever doses they want to get the desired result, you know. So a lot of people who go to jail for mental illness, if they want to keep the person longer, if they want to lengthen their sentence, and that often happens to the mentally ill, they just simply stop giving them their meds. And when they do that, sudden cessation of meds, then that person might go off and have a mental health crisis, and then they will charge them extra years for whatever inappropriate thing they did. So they're in control of when mentally ill people get extra time by the manipulation of their psychotraumatic drugs, their psychotropic drugs. They're in complete control of that. So, again, if they want someone who's already in their clutches in jail to get extra time, they simply stop giving them their meds, give them a new combination of meds that will get the desired result. For whatever reason, Mark Bowles had an epileptic seizure in the hospital. This supposedly scared the nurse. She fell and bumped her own head. Mark Bowles got charged with assault. But when it went to court there in Minnesota, what happened is they decided that it would be best from a prison investment standpoint not to let the jury hear that Mark Bowles was in court because he was a veteran who had PTSD and had epilepsy and was having an epileptic crisis when this nurse fell and bumped her head. They decided, oh, no, we can't let them hear why he was having an epileptic crisis. We can't even let them know he has epilepsy. We can't let them know any of that. So the jury doesn't know it. And number two, they couldn't know about his medicine overdose. So the only two defenses that Mark Bowles had, the judge suppressed. I said the judge suppressed it, and his defense attorney was not allowed to tell what it is about Mark Bowles that scared the nurse so that she fell and bumped her own head. And so Mark Bowles is charged with assault. And because he wouldn't take their deal and give them an out from going to trial, he'll probably be there for years at your expense because he stood his ground and went to trial. He know he didn't hurt anyone. So this is how innocent people, particularly the mentally ill, are treated in America. They are the prison investments. They are the prison investments for the prison profiteers, who often include the judges, the prosecutors, and in some cases, defense attorneys. So I'm going to see if any of you called in and if you want to have a word today, because, you know, I'm just giving you some common sense examples of how the prison profiteering system feeds itself. It's sort of like that plant that was on that show. Do you remember that show about that great big plant where the plant is saying, "Feed me, I'm hungry. Feed me, Leroy." I forgot what movie that was, but that's what the plant would say. "Feed me, I'm hungry, Leroy." And so that's the system. And it all begins, for a lot of people, it begins when they start feeding the mentally ill homeless to them through shutting off funds for shelters. Shutting off funds for shelters. And that's what's happening in Atlanta. Bob Darby talked to us about that last week and the week before last. And you can go online and get his broadcast from those dates and hear him tell you about the shutting down of shelters in Atlanta, the city where we have a new human rights center. And if you go online and look at it, it's a beautiful building. But what does it mean? What does a human rights center mean in a city that does not do human rights? What does it mean? I know that, you know, there's not much respect for human rights in Atlanta, because I went downtown Atlanta and stood there at the Candler Building, C-A-N-D-L-E-R, a beautiful historic building. I used to work there. And I was standing outside there. I wasn't there to work a normal job. I was there to talk to people about the total disregard for human rights that it took for my brother to be secretly arrested and murdered in Memphis Shelby County Jail, and for us to be years later denied any information about his kidnapping, that's a government kidnapping, and murder. You know, that happened in the USA. I'm not talking about we had been over to China. We hadn't been to China. We hadn't been to Russia. I've never been there and don't intend to go. But this happened in America, murdered in Memphis Shelby County Jail. So I was talking to people about this downtown Atlanta in front of the Candler Building, Street, at the corner of Auburn Avenue. Auburn Avenue is a very historic street. I want you know to look online for Auburn Avenue in Atlanta. That's a historic street. It used to be the black hub in Atlanta. It was a time when black people couldn't shop with white people. Black people had a set-aside day. I believe it was Wednesday, was the only day that they could go into department stores and spend their money. And they couldn't try on things before they bought it either. They couldn't get their black on things that Caucasians might end up buying. So they had a special shopping day and what have you. But meanwhile, they took all of the money down on Auburn Avenue and shopped with black merchants there. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. happened to have been born on Auburn Avenue. And his church, Ebenezer Baptist Church, is right there on Auburn Avenue. And today, murdered him, his center, the Martin Luther King Center, is on Auburn Avenue. So Auburn Avenue is quite a historic street with lots of landmarks. The Jenny Cochran firm, which is a COINTELPRO organization, I believe, that's set up to deport African Americans throughout the nation. It is right there in the Candler Building, which is on the corner of Auburn Avenue and Peachtree Street. I guess that's symbolic. It means that the black people have, you know, made it to Peachtree Street, but we're still on Auburn Avenue. Auburn Avenue meets Peachtree Street, and right there is where the Cochran firm Frost decided to put their law firm, because their job is to continue and perpetuate this myth that blacks have arrived. There was a time when if police killed blacks, which happens all the time now, but there was a time when that happened, it would spark riots. I think the last occasion of that, and probably one of the worst occasions, is when police in California beat up on Rodney King real bad, and that sparked tremendous riots, lots of property damage, and I believe 32 people were murdered during the riots. And so these people decided, oh, we can't have this. I tell you what, let's pretend that blacks have human rights, and let's have a law firm that supposedly goes in and represents them for their human rights, and let's do that. Let's use the Cochran firm. Well, Janet Cochran's dead, so let's get that through our heads. He's dead. So the Cochran firm is one of the law firms that was chosen to carry out this myth that black people have human rights that are really respected now. Because, you know, this is supposed to be the age of colorblindness. And so the Cochran firm took our case, the wrongful death of Larry Neal, and you can read about that online. And they never did file suit. They never even conducted discovery. They just lied, tricked us, while the Tennessee statute of limitations passed. So while we're thinking we got lawsuits going forward, they had their stuff in their files doing nothing on it. It was secretly suppressed by the Jenny Cochran firm. Remember now, Jenny Cochran is dead. So this is what happened. And when we found out about it, of course, we sued them, the Cochran firm, for fraud. And the judges worked with them and declared the Cochran firm non-existent in the state of Georgia. Now, do me a favor. Next time you sit at a computer, put in the Cochran firm Atlanta and watch your screen show up zero. No, it's not going to show up zero. It's going to show up the Cochran firm Atlanta office, because the judge lied, the Cochran firm lied. They all tricked and lied together. And the judge actually issued us a court order dismissing our case based on that bald-faced lie, that they have no law firm in Atlanta. And so that's what I was telling people that day down in front of the Candler Building. And two police came and told me that I had to leave. And I said, no, I have freedom of speech. I have the right to be here. I checked before I came here and made sure it was okay, and I'm following the rules I was told. I was told I don't need a permit to picket because I don't have 75 people with me, and I have a sign, but it's not on a stick, and I'm not blocking the ingress or egress of this building. And those are the three rules I was told. I said, so by what power are you telling me I can't talk to people about the Cochran firm fraud against my family? And they said, you need to go, because if you don't, we're going to taser you and arrest you. I said, well, on what basis? They said, on the basis that you don't have free speech in Atlanta. You don't have freedom of speech here, and you better get out of here. These are police officers. I don't have free speech in Atlanta. These are the people who just built nice building called the Center for Human Rights. Okay? And these are black folks, black police, mostly blacks in the city council, and a black mayor. So don't get all confused on, oh, I'm going to go and vote black. I'm going to vote black. A lot of people are impressed with skin color. And what did Martin Luther King tell us? He told us already to don't judge a man by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. These people don't have character. They only have dollar signs in their minds, black or white. You have to really discern who a person is and how interested they are in justice other than looking at their skin color, because truly, you cannot go by that. And he was not just talking to Caucasians. That's the other thing. Lots of black people think that when you talk about suppression, you're talking about Caucasians. Honey, some of these, you've never been suppressed until a black person suppressed you. They know how to suppress your butt, okay? They know how to suppress your butt. Listen, black-on-black crime is not confined to the ghetto. So I want you to know that blacks who have one or two college degrees, who have a few dollars in the bank, I want you to know that they were lots more interested in the terms disenfranchised and in the downtrodden when that condition described them. Because there was a time when no matter how much money or how much education a black person had, if he rode the city bus, he had to get in the back with the masses of black people. There was a time when no matter what kind of suit a black person had on, when Martin Luther King was a young man going to Morehouse College, if he had to ride the bus to school, even though he was a very promising student or what have you, the only place he could sit on that bus was in the back of the bus, period. It didn't matter that he was a bright and promising young college student. He had to go, just keep it moving, buddy, and get to the back of the bus. And that was the same condition of all black people in that day, in that day. So, therefore, black people who had money, who had education, who had the finest of clothes, who even had good friends, they thought, among Caucasians in high positions. They still were the downtrodden. They still were the disenfranchised, simply from their skin color. So back in the 60s and before then, you could just believe that if you help somebody black get in office, that they're going to work with you to eliminate that prejudice, because they're working to free themselves. But now that that prejudice based on skin color is no longer on them, they got their congressional seat, they got their mayor, they got their president of the university seat. So now it doesn't matter to them about the suppression, because it's not based on skin color anymore. It's based on wealth. Is based on your wealth status. And it's still based on skin color, but they feel like they've risen above that. They feel like they have. And so they are just as quick to step on the oppressed, no matter what color they are, as their oppressors once were. So being black in office does not necessarily mean that you have sympathy for the masses of black people. Don't think it. Because these were black police officers who told me I better not tell the public about my brother's secret arrest and lynching. These were black city officials. These were black county officials, Fulton County. Okay? Black people can be as oppressive as anybody else. Idi Amin was worse than most people. Okay? So whoever sold you or your family into slavery was likely a black king in Africa. So understand that really money is the great divide. It's the great divide. So it's time for everyone, whether they're black or white, whether they're Asian or Native American, we need to join hands against oppression. And we need to begin by standing up for the poor and needy and everyone who's appointed to destruction. That's what it says in Proverbs 31, 8 and 9. And that's just good human rights. That's just good human rights. It really, you don't have to be religious to obey or honor or study the Bible. But you do need to have an appreciation for human rights because, you know, Jesus Christ is the world's greatest human rights advocate, you know, and he is the Word. So study the Bible. What you're really studying is human rights. You're studying how people who are oppressed can rise above oppression. And the best answer to that is probably in Genesis. Genesis, the 11th chapter and the 6th verse. And where God said, behold, the peoples is one. And he did say peoples in the plural. And they is one. And that is no mistake. That's not bad grammar. He was saying that the peoples is one. And this they began to do. And now nothing can be withheld from them that they determined to do because they have one language. So that's my paraphrase of Genesis 11:6. He said, behold, the peoples is one, and they have one language, and now nothing can be withheld from them which they determined to do. And you know what gives us one language? The computer. The computer gives us one, because no matter what language you type in, the computer can translate it. So right now, you can take this message on today's show, Bob, Human Rights, okay? You can take this show for the homeless, mentally ill, and you can, first of all, you can ask for a transcript of it by computer. And secondly, you can translate it into any language you want to. So, the people, we're where God said we need to be. We have one language. And what did he say would happen when the people had one language? He said, behold, these people is one. We have one language, but we're not one. So that's why we don't get anything done. We're still all fragmented. The white people are looking at the black people, and the white people are looking at the brown people. And generally, the prejudice is coming from the whites, I got to tell you. They're looking at the brown people. Why are these brown people over in our land? And a Native American is looking at the white person saying, did you hear her? You know. So the thing is, it's time for everybody to join hands together against oppression, especially oppression in the justice system, you know. And we need to unite because we've got one language. One language is possible now through the computer. But we're not one. We're divided, divided among racial lines and divided by economic lines, socioeconomic divisions. Here's the deal. Here's the true deal. It doesn't matter. You might think it matters a whole lot if you get, say you get $500,000 in the bank, plus you get some land, you get a house, you get a paid-for vehicle. You're doing pretty well. You're what they call solidly middle class. You got $100,000 saved. You get property. You get a nice car that's paid for. You get your insurance policies, and you get your children's education all saved. you're solidly middle class, okay? Do you think that that puts you in a different, or do you think that really puts you in a different economic bracket from someone who's not working? You think it does? It does not. You need to look at a movie that's called Fun with Dick and Jane. That's a, I like comedies, and that's a movie, Fun with Dick and Jane. They were a solidly middle class family. And they had a big, beautiful house, and they had good jobs. I assume they had the good jobs because they had the good education. And they were Caucasian, and white makes you right. But one day, Dick lost his job. And after Dick lost his job, they were only months away from the welfare land. They were only months away from the welfare land after Dick lost his job. It doesn't matter if you're making $200,000 a year. If you lose your job and don't recover another income real quickly, you're going to find yourself in trouble. There's an article that was going around online about written by a white woman who was solidly middle class, and she and her husband, both of them, I think, lost their main jobs. And they went down to food stamps, and she was writing about her experience getting food stamps. Okay? So it doesn't really matter. You don't have enough protection to feel protected if all you're going by is that you've got some dollars in the bank and you've got a good job. That's not enough division for you to separate yourself from people who are already on food stamps, because you just lower middle class. That's all. You don't have it all together like you think you do. You really don't. And more people are finding out every day that their little jobs and their little savings are not going to protect them from oppression. Because something can happen to wipe that out. Those people who worked at Enron thought they were so protected from poverty, but they weren't. Those oppressors up there at the top of their company just wiped out their pension account in no time. And they thought they were protected from poverty. And now, here it is now, I guess we're about 10 or 20 years later, many of those people who worked at Enron, now they're retired, and they don't have that big retirement savings that they thought they had. They don't. And now these people are working on Social Security. You know, lots of people have worked all these years, and they figure, you know, they get their little annual statement. If you retired today, your Social Security would be this amount. Or if you got handicapped today, your Social Security would be that amount. And, honey, by the time you do ever get hurt or you do ever retire, you might find out with these people playing around with Social Security that guess what you have? Nothing. Nothing. That's not impossible. They're warning us about it all the time. Not that Social Security is really running out of money. The government owes Social Security money. They've been borrowing it. Okay? Social Security is not running out of money, but they are hungry after it, honey, like wolves. They're hungry after that money. They want to get it and invest it in their companies, because I told you they're insider traders. They're insider traders. So they're doing inside trading, and they want to get your Social Security and invest it in their companies. And then the company will go bust. A few of them will go bust, just like the savings and loans did. And then they'll gobble up all of American Social Security. That's what they do. They specialize in it. You see. And so this oppression that's on us is common to everybody who's in the middle class and people who've already been grounded down until we're in the oppressed class called poor. and they've got many Caucasians really believing their lies that, oh, black people are broke because they're lazy. Whereas if a company comes in town right now today and says, okay, we're taking applications only for 3 hours tomorrow from 8 until 12, and we're going to pay everybody a decent wage, come on down here between 8 and 12 and apply, and we're going to hire on the spot tomorrow. If you make such an announcement, people wouldn't even wait till tomorrow. They would leave tonight with their coolers and their little lawn chairs, and they would sleep all night on the sidewalk outside of such companies. How do I know that? Because it's been done. And you know where it was done? It was done at Waffle House. Waffle House, a job that didn't even have any benefits, and where the people, the servers, make $2.40 an hour. And the line was around the building for a Waffle House job. So these people are lying to you when they say, oh, poor people are poor because they don't want to work. They're flat out lying. Okay? They're poor because it's engineered, because keeping people suppressed, oppressed, and poor is a way to get them where? In prison. No crime necessary. You've been listening to a lot of lies. You've heard a lot of lies. You hear them so often that they sound believable to you. And then, you know, in order to live at a certain comfort level yourself without any sense of guilt about it, with all of this wrong stuff going on around you, you have sort of insulated yourself. And then you've accepted these lies as truth. You've accepted as truth. We don't have money for programs for the mentally ill. And then the same newscast, you hear them say, do we need to start a war with this country? Do you know what one bomb costs? Okay. Do you have any idea what just one bomb costs? I tell you, I'm going to get that information for you, because one bomb is very expensive. And the same newscast where they say, we don't have money to keep the shelter open for the homeless, mentally ill, they'll say, we're going to have to go over and get those 200 women in Africa, find somebody else's 200 women, but we don't have any money to keep the women we have here in America sheltered with their children. Okay, does that make sense to you? That's why they don't like me to be on the radio, because I just talk to you about common sense. Common sense. Try to have some common sense. You know, try to have common sense. The Bible said there's none so blind as those who will not see. And you've been stumbling around like a blind person, believing all this propaganda that you hear on their news reports. Did you ever hear about them secretly arresting and murdering my disabled brother on any news report? Do you think it's because they don't know about it? They know about it. In fact, when Jenny Cochran firm had itself declared to be non-existent in the state of Georgia, all over the state is non-existent. They don't have any Jenny Cochran firm law offices at all in the state of Georgia. Let Georgia Superior Court tell it. Let the Cochran firm tell it. And even in federal court, they told that lie. So, you heard me tell you that they went to court with perjury and got supported in their perjury bad judges. But do you think that the ABC, NBC, CNN, CBS, Fox, do you think they ever told that the Cochran firm used that defense, that perjury? No. Why? Because they get advertising money off the Cochran firm, number one. And number two, the same people who own your media are a part of this whole big prison investment scheme. They're a part of the establishment. They benefit directly off of any kind of crazy laws these lawmakers pass. And they're going to tell you what the news is every day. And every day you turn it on.